Blog Talk Radio.
Well, aloha, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to PWT Talks NXT. I'm your host, Kelly Wells. You can find me all over social media at Spooky Milk or at SpookyMilk.com. You can find me all the hell over the torch of the last couple of weeks. Talked some SmackDown last week. Talked about the Mick Foley live show a week ago today with Wade on the Daily Cast on the Wade Keller podcast. Yeah, been on a myriad of shows, and thankfully back on this one. I've missed three of the last four for wildly different reasons, and we are back. We are on a long streak of not having all three of the regular idiots here, I, of course, being one of those idiots, but we are all here tonight. Maybe I shouldn't say that aloud. By the time I throw to one of you guys, you'll be, yeah, I don't know, dead. But as far as I can tell, all three guys are going to be here to talk about this show this week. So we are going to talk about NXT for the Ides of March 2022, a show anchored by the main event of, you know what, I take notes, always thinking I don't really need to. But then I get to the podcast having forgotten to take those notes for the first time ever, and I realize I don't remember the main event because it wasn't. LA Knight challenging for the NXT Championship against Dolph Ziggler. This was, as were most segments today, just a way to get us a little bit closer to Stand and Deliver. Ziggler wins this match on the usual being a distraction, and gets a shot in and gets the win after a super kick. Not the zigzag this time, just super kick. Takes down LA Knight. I think Knight probably being fast-tracked for the main roster. He could show up in the ladder match, I suppose. But I don't know if he needs to or if he will or if he'll just be moved up to the main roster shortly after WrestleMania. That's my guess. I don't think there's a whole lot more that they need to really tinker with. I think the big decision is, do you debut him on the main roster as a babyface or a heel? And I wonder where they are in that internal discussion, because I think it will be very interesting to see what they do with them there. Bron Breakker comes out after the main event to because he has some issues with Dolph Ziggler and the way he took the championship from Bron Breakker. So there you go. You've got that rematch happening for Stand and Deliver. Bron Breakker says, I don't want to wait. Bruce Hazelwood mentioned that this was a little silly because I don't want to wait any longer. And then he made a match that it guaranteed he would be waiting longer for Stand and Deliver. So in a couple of weeks, he will face Bron Breakker will face Dolph Ziggler for the championship in this time, a one-on-one. And I guess I'm torn there. Seems like they could be fast-tracking Braun, but this track would be extremely fast. Tom Staup, who are you, and what did you think of this main event?
I'm awake. And I am here. Your prior concern is thankfully unfounded, although I might not be here for long because I tried to go to your advertised SpookyMilk.com, and it's telling me this website may be impersonating Spooky Milk to steal your personal or financial information. You should go back.
Did I say something about SpookyMilk.com?
You sure did.
What in the hell, Tom? Okay. Oh, my gosh.
So visit SpookyMilk.games instead on all over social media, all over it. I suppose we can probably cover the Miz TV segment separately.
You're for a bruising there.
This, I've been doing it my whole life. Where do I want to start with this? I was pretty strong last week and on Wrestling Night in America that I felt like a Ziggler-Breakker rematch for the championship was the wrong move. Rematches are not the default anymore in WWE. They've actually stuck with that for several years after Shane McMahon announced it on SmackDown Live or whenever that was. And I feel like you've already established Breakker on the NXT Championship level. Fans seem to have accepted it. And now is an opportunity not just to build up other people around the John Cena Open Challenge-like potential that a Ziggler summer run presents, assuming Ziggler is up for that task. And, I mean, so far he seems to be, even though the lack of side plates on the belt that was held up certainly seems to be a clue, as to the contrary. It just seems like there's no one else who is in the title picture. You had Gunther stick his nose in, and he's the one who I said on Wrestling Night in America and still feel should be the next NXT champion, but that's after other people, LA Knight being a good starting place, have challenged Ziggler and lost. And then you know, Gunther can come in and wipe the mat with Ziggler. Heel works in that situation. Heel also being a reason why I'm not suggesting people like Grayson Waller, who, you know, with a babyface champion would feel more like next up. But it's an opportunity, getting back to where I was originally, spookymilk.com, Bron Breakker, this is an opportunity to establish more of his character, which was happening before he was the champion. And when he was the champion, it was just like, okay, that's the signifier. The belt is making the man isn't making the belt. Now the belt has made the man to the level that this belt needs to for its purposes. So continue making the man and put him in a grudge match against Ciampa. Ciampa's the one that got pinned. Ciampa's the one that lost Breakker the championship. So just do that. And as I phrased it last week, have Breakker beat the NXT out of Ciampa. So all of that said, all of that repeated from the last two podcasts I've appeared on the free side of pwtorch.com, they're going what I feel is a far less interesting direction. I almost thought, okay, maybe they're getting both things done. Maybe they're putting him back toward the title. Maybe he won't win. Maybe I'll still get to eat that cake too. But they're characterizing him a bit. The security camera footage that they put out on Twitter and showed at the beginning of the show is kind of, I mean, you know, hackneyed or whatever, but it works. You know, there's some character there beyond what he was showing as the champion. And then indeed, just like you quoted Bruce as saying, he storms in, he's trying to get in. Barrett had the really nice touch of, you know, now that we don't have William Regal anymore, Barrett had the really nice touch of saying Coach Bloom removed him. So that's the new, I like, you know, obviously Coach Bloom is the perfect one to slot in when you need a name to pull for that kind of thing. And Breakker, oh, well, he's not even supposed to be here, enters to his music with all of his production and lights and everything, and then just stands there and challenges for the match, and that's it. So that was bizarre. And as for the match, since I imagine we won't be circling, I mean, what else is there to circle back to? I will just mention yet again that I think it's silly LA Knight is so raked over the coals for his, quote, work rate. I mean, what do you want this guy to do? Springboard double moonsaults? He's a storyteller in the ring. And every single time there's a match, I see people just like, oh, it's an LA Knight match. Oh, well, you know, he's not that great in the ring. He is exactly what you need in a wrestler who is telling stories and engaging you on a character level. So I'm perfectly fine with the between the bells element of what LA Knight has been bringing.
And I talked about that before he showed up, because I was watching NWA before it was the whatever it is now. Early on in
good
power
question.
And I say, yeah, who knows? And I pitched to you, Tom, I was like, you are definitely going to like this guy as long as they strike the right balance with his character. Like they dole out the correct amount of his character, because as a heel, you can make him as much LA Knight as you want. As a face, if you go too far, it is irritating. Did you notice he didn't say, yeah, this week?
Mm-hmm.
He went right to, let me talk to you.
Oh, let the fans say, yeah, and they did.
Yeah, a big fan of him just going right into that. But I knew you'd like him for all the same reasons that I like him. He is something that was lacking in that particular department in NXT, especially if 5-6 months ago. This is what they needed, an in-ring storyteller. And he is older than a lot of the people that were regulars on NXT 1.5. So he really did – he really was an older wrestler. And I don't know who trained him in the first place. I don't tend to remember those things. But I'm glad that he works the way he does. And it is disheartening to people see wrestling the way that it historically made boatloads of money and protected people, and them just kind of crapping on it. It's a real bummer.
I do get a kick out of Ziggler calling him kid when Ziggler's only 2 years older.
He was trained. Go ahead.
He was trained by Cody Hawk and Les Thatcher.
Wow. There you go. So
how about that?
Mm-hmm. Makes sense. Yeah, I might have guessed that Knight was older, but apparently, yeah, even just the 2 year difference. Nate, now that that everyone's depressed about the state of the way things are, tell us what you thought of the main event. Or don't. I mean, it doesn't matter.
Hey, sorry. I was actually busy registering the domain name spookymilk.com.
Oh, my God. You're both going to get punched.
All right. L.A. Knight and Dolph Ziggler. So I actually really enjoyed the main event in terms of, like, the wrestling, the match. I really can't say anything negative about, like, the wrestling in and of itself. And everything you guys are just talking about LA Knight, I'm right on board with him as well. I'm right there. I think he is probably, out of everybody on the male NXT roster, probably the most ready for the main event, with maybe the exception of, like, Ciampa. Other than that, like, I think he's the one to go up. The only thing I'm not really super high on is this is kind of Bron Breakker coming back to immediately challenge once again for the NXT title. This is what I talked about last week, and I think maybe actually it was definitely last week, because that's when Ziggler won the title. I kind of figured this is what was going to happen. We're going to wind up seeing at Stand and Deliver a rematch between Ziggler and Bron Breakker, finally in a singles match. And I'm not super jazzed about it. Now, I am into Bron Breakker as a top guy in NXT. He's won me over. At first, I was kind of like, wasn't quite sure, but he's kind of won me over. And I like the fact that they're not, like, pushing him down our throats, you know, a la Roman Reigns and John Cena. It's, again, stuff I talked about last week. But I really like the idea, and of course, this is just fantasy booking, right? But I really like Tom's idea of, like, a Summer of Ziggler, you know, putting on some sort of, like, an open challenge or something along those lines. It doesn't necessarily have to be an open challenge, but I really like that idea, because for the exact reasons that Tom brought up, there does not seem to be anybody else on the male NXT roster that seems to be a credible challenge for the NXT title right now. Tommaso Ciampa maybe, but it's going to be his swan song at Stand and Deliver, and he's going up to main roster, you know, almost guaranteed, especially after the speech that he gave tonight. So I'm not, like, super jazzed about this Stand and Deliver match, or, you know, at least next week, if that's what it turns out to be, between Ziggler and Breakker. But at the same time, I'm not, like, completely opposed to it either, because Bron Breakker, he has seemed like a credible contender for the title. I felt like he wasn't necessarily a strong champion, because obviously lost in his first title defense, but he seemed like a credible champion, right? And I'm high on him. I don't feel like if he was to I feel like if he was to recapture the title, you know, it would be believable. I don't have anything more to say that you guys didn't already cover, but I got to give the main event a thumbs up. Overall, I enjoyed it. I really, really liked what LA Knight brought to the table tonight. His promo, like when he stepped in the ring with Bobby Roode, Miz, and Ziggler, he felt like he belonged there. You've got three main roster guys sitting in an NXT ring, and LA Knight just walks in, and he felt like he absolutely belonged in that ring with just his promo style, his charisma, the way he presented himself. So yeah, thumbs up all around on LA Knight. I'd love to see him as NXT champion. Not sure, I'm sure he's probably main roster bound sooner rather than later. But at the same time, I've been saying that since probably Halloween Havoc. So, we'll see what happens. But yeah, that's all I get to say about that.
I will add only that if WWE did a tournament, 64 man and woman tournament of wrestlers who were given the worst first and last names for a character, the finals could be Dolph Ziggler versus Braun Breaker. It could get to them in the finals.
100%. 100%.
But they do what they do. All right. Do you want to call us? You can call us at spookymilk.com. that number is 515-605-9345. That's right. I'm even scoring points on myself today. You can email us at pwtorsion. So tempting to just keep doing it. pwtorchnxt@gmail.com. Let's go to 814. This is our friend Ryan from Cumberland in Maryland. And Ryan, if you are unmuted, go ahead and let us know what you thought of NXT tonight.
It was a fine show. My first question is on Dolph Ziggler. How much influence do you think he has on who can go to the main roster, say, like, if he doesn't like working with someone, saying that he could say something to Vince and say, I don't like working with this guy, or the exact opposite can say, well, I have high praise for this guy. He did a great job with me in the ring. Like, sort of like what Randy Orton did with King Kennedy, when King Kennedy screwed up a move and got King Kennedy fired.
So I would doubt highly that he has any official swing. But if he doesn't like working with these guys, that will indeed happen. And if he has good reason to say why he doesn't work like working with these guys. Now, it's a bit of a boys club where, to the time, most wrestlers will not do that. Certain wrestlers will do it all the time because that's their personality. I don't know enough about Dolph to know what he's like, but he seems like, I don't know. He seems like for the boys, but he also seems like the ultimate company man as well. So it's a good question. I don't think that he could say, don't bring this guy up, and have any guarantee that that would carry any water. But if he didn't want somebody to go up, justified or not, he probably could frame the way they work together in such a way that that would have, even if not, even if it wasn't conscious on the part of those making that kind of decision, it would probably weigh in. We know that Vince only really listens to Vince in the end, but Dolph probably has a lot more unofficial power than people might in this kind of situation. Tom, would you feel the same?
Yes, I would, especially after Dolph has been, and this is something I've criticized, but Dolph has been like the go-to first feud for so, like probably the majority of consequential call-ups. Or at least call-ups that seem like they could be consequential until they feud with Dolph Ziggler for 3 months. But beyond that, I just think it's a great question, one I actually hadn't considered, and I totally echo all of your other thoughts on it.
Nate, you want to be you want to argue against that for the sake of doing it?
Sure. Yeah. I mean, Dolph. No, I can't really, because I don't know. I can't really argue against something I don't believe in. I'm pretty much right there with you. I don't think Dolph Ziggler necessarily has the pull to be like, don't bring this guy up or whatever. Like, something like John Cena or Undertaker or potentially even Roman Reigns would have. But I think he has enough clout in the company to have a little bit of pull, and maybe a little bit of persuasion, perhaps, you know, give his input or something, but I don't think it would necessarily be like an end-all be-all.
Yeah, we've seen that with – I think gatekeepers probably often have that kind of power because historically somebody who can work is put in that position. When I started watching wrestling, Tito Santana was the babyface gatekeeper for years. Like if you couldn't have a good match when you were beating Tito at the beginning of your heel career, then you'd pretty much stall out. And Tito wasn't Tito's so weird. He's like not even a wrestling fan and has said so in his interviews since being a wrestler, but still seems to enjoy what he did and was able to do. But I would imagine that that they would go to Tito, and he was not somebody who was getting any kind of push on TV, but he was getting plenty of time and he was in a very valuable spot, and they probably really, really valued his input. So now that you know how old I am, Ryan, go ahead with another.
Yeah, second question is on Dominic Mysterio. Do you think he would have benefited more from being in NXT, or do you think he got more out of being with his dad and learning traveling the roads with Rey Mysterio?
It's tough to say. I don't know that Dominic has it. I mean, he's perfectly decent in the ring, but he does not have the kind of look or the poise or the swagger or the mic skills or literally anything else other than the pedigree of his name. He would not have a job in WWE if he was not the son of Rey Mysterio. And Dominic was in storylines when he was an infant child. That is true. He's been in storylines for a long time, but nobody who looks like Dominic is getting a really, really long look at the Performance Center. Nobody that looks like Dominic is getting recruited to be in the Performance Center, even though they are not wrestlers in high school. Whether they're weightlifters or football players or track runners who all are being recruited to be in the PC. He certainly would have benefited from being in NXT, but you can also benefit a lot just by being out there with Rey Mysterio. But at the same time, he was out there with Rey Mysterio to some degree for a very good percentage of his life when he was able to, you know, see his dad. These guys live their lives on the road. I don't know what the answer is for Dominic. I don't know that his upside is high enough regardless. I'm in NXT now for a while. I wouldn't be against that, but I see him struggling not to smile during an interview and struggling to kind of get out some basic information because Ray is no great shakes on the mic, but he found a lane that works for him on the mic. And Dominic, I can't say the same for him. It's just not working for him on the mic at all most of the time. And he just looks out there like he's doing an impersonation of a wrestler rather than being a wrestler sometimes. Don't want to be super down on him because I really, really want to love every bit of the Mysterio legacy. But Dominic is, you know,
he's Dominic.
He's Dominic. Nate, you got anything else?
Oh yeah, I do. So I actually wrote a little bit about this in the hits and misses, which I do have up on pwtorch.com if you'd like to check it out. But I wrote a little bit about this tonight. I absolutely, and I've been saying this for a long time, not necessarily on this show, probably privately. And I've probably said it on this show or Wrestling Night in America or something, you know, before. I 100% think Dominic should have gone through the PC. You know, there's a lot you can learn from Rey Mysterio, you know, whether he is your father or not. Absolutely. But I think that if he was down in the PC, and he spent some considerable time in NXT, he may have been able to work on some of those promo skills. He would have been, you know, he would have had those promo classes. He would have had other peers that are also learning how to cut a promo and how to talk and how to act and everything else to also kind of help and guide him as well. I really feel like he probably should have spent some time in NXT first. And the other thing, you know, we talk about his ring style, you know, he's decent in the ring. Absolutely. And he's got that style down, but he looks so awkward doing it because of his size, and he's kind of, you know, he's a little bit lanky and whatever. I really feel like he needs to get away from this whole, you know, the high flying lucha style. He can still incorporate it into his moveset and whatever, but I feel like he needs to stop trying to be his dad and kind of fall into his own lane and find his own, you know, his own style and everything like that. Now, granted, he's probably being directed that way too. You know, he's probably, people are probably saying, yeah, you're his dad. You know, or you're his son rather. So, you know, wrestle like your father, but I don't think it's doing him any benefit. You know, and in terms of like his promo work and things like that, like tonight, when Ray and Dominic showed up during that interview segment with Legado del Fantasma, it, like, everybody looked like they belonged there, including Mackenzie Mitchell, except for Dominic. Dominic looked like a guy who literally just kind of like stumbled out of the audience and then into a, you know, an interview segment backstage. And that's kind of how he always looks in those backstage interviews and things like that. You know, I kind of just to echo what you said. I mean, I hate saying it, but if he wasn't the son of Rey Mysterio, I don't think he would have a job in WWE with the current skill set that he has. I'm not saying he wouldn't later down the road or what have you, but as it stands right now, I don't think that he would be in the position that he's in. He, if anything, he would be, you know, down in NXT. I feel like kind of, I don't want to say jobber status, but, you know, lower mid card or something like that. That's at least kind of my two cents anyway. But, you know, I like Dominic, like you said, Kelly. I really want to love the whole, you know, everything about the Mysterio legacy. Rey is like one of my favorites. I wouldn't say he's in my top five, but he's certainly up there. You know, as a kid, I absolutely loved Rey Mysterio. How couldn't you love Rey Mysterio to this day? I mean, he even can still go, you know, he still can go in the ring. So yeah, my two cents anyway, Dominic should certainly have spent some time down in NXT before going up the main roster.
You know, it seems like Rey definitely is Dominic's hero. And you say that he's got the style down, and of course, and this is what you're insinuating, he's got the wrong style down.
Yeah, exactly.
That's not the style he should be working. He looks like somebody who should be working, I don't know, pick your poison. Pick Robert Roode, pick Chad Gable, pick somebody else. It's also kind of awkward that he's doing this Rey Mysterio tribute act when he is the tag team partner of Rey Mysterio. So it doesn't work on a nostalgic level because the partner is standing there on the apron waiting to be tagged in.
Yeah, like you can certainly incorporate some of his moveset or something like that. Yeah, sure, do the 619 or yep, you know, what have you. You do a frog splash or, you know, to signal, you know, to commemorate your other dad. But yeah, you know, he really does. He needs to find his own style and kind of get away from it a little bit. I don't think he's going to be like the next masked luchador Mysterio. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I mean, they could be out there being the Hart Foundation, and instead they're out there being a couple of Rey Mysterios, which makes you just want to see a Rey Mysterio match. Tom.
Glad the question came up. It's come up before. Actually, I think every single time I've been on the Keller Post show and Dominic has a match, I address this question, and my answer has remained that no, Dominic should not have gone through NXT. The complicating factor there is the term NXT, because at the time that Dominic came up, NXT was focused on the work rate of former Ring of Honor stars. That is not a place for Dominic Mysterio. So Dominic should have gone through the Performance Center, yes. And as we know, apparently that was the plan before they got excited about putting him on TV for a SummerSlam build. And here we are. So if they were going to get excited about him getting on TV, NXT at the time was not the right place for him. He should have been kept off TV, training up through the PC with that whole group of people that we are now seeing on 2.0. The main roster was a better starting place for him because the expectations for the in-ring are far lower. Or lower, slower, whatever word you want to use, more suited to Dominic's water level than what NXT puts on between the bells, or in any other segment. I you don't need to feel bad about being super down on Dominic around me. I am also super down on him. So as awkward as it was that we had that interview segment where Escobar is saying, I'm the greatest luchador ever, and if you've ever watched wrestling before, you know that that's a Rey Mysterio tease, and then Rey just shows up. You're like, oh, they're laying the groundwork for a Rey Mysterio thing here. And then Rey's just right there standing in the same room. Outside of the awkwardness of that, I was like, oh, hey, Rey's got something going on at Mania, or Dom does, rather. They both do, but focusing on Dominic. Dominic does have something going on at Mania, but maybe they finally decided to put him on NXT. And now, in the 2.0 era, this is the right place for Dominic to be. He should be here. Unfortunately, that's not what's going to happen. We're going to get a stand and deliver match between Escobar and Rey, with Dom at ringside, and Dom will clear out the other Phantasmazoids, and that'll be it. And then he'll go back to the main roster, and no progress will be made. But that is still where I stand on Dom. If they were gonna put him on TV at the time that they did, he started in the right place, and now his right place has changed. But I don't think they're going to put him there.
In kayfabe, should Mackenzie Mitchell be fired for letting just anyone into the room?
Just and for other reasons as well. She, you know, she should probably be fired for having a name.
That's true.
Yeah,
she's got not only a name but two, and it sounds real.
Well, just wait till she hits the main roster. She'll just be like Mitchell.
Or they'll just change Mackenzie to MKKENZIE because you got to have two K's in a row.
Just like
Kelly by the way,
Wells.
No mention, Kelly. No mention of Nikita Lyons this week. Not a single mention. Yeah, I felt that way. I'll just say it now because why the hell not? It seems like they stepped just a little bit back from the extremes they were going to with these unready talents. Tonight was a show that was largely about talents that are ready to go now. And anything with talents that aren't necessarily ready was mostly kept short. I mean, there were quite a few Cora Jade segments, but for the most part, it was stuff that person is pretty ready now. They kind of backed up off of what's that?
It was just hilarious. Like they're totally focusing on people who are ready. Well, there were a lot of Cora Jade segments, but
and I'm one of her defenders. I mean,
yeah,
I know how that sounded. I know how that sounded. And
no,
it was
just very funny.
She's more ready than those who were kept off this show.
Yes.
But on the mic, she needs some work. It's pieces are in place. She sounds like somebody who knows how the emotions should work, but who doesn't know how to make them sound natural. And somebody's like, hey, you know how, like when you're talking and stuff, do that.
And on the subject of Nikita Lyons, that is her exact thing. If you go and look for interviews that she's done, she was interviewed after she got signed. She was interviewed as like a promotional thing for WOW when she was wrestling for them. Quote wrestling. If you watch one of her matches, I don't know if it qualifies, but she comes off real naturally. She's perfectly comfortable in front of a microphone. Clearly something she's done a number of times and she's not afraid of it, but you give her a script and put her on TV as a character and it ain't working.
Yep, can't call it wrestling. Can't call it sports entertainment. The word entertainment's in there. I don't know what you can call it at this point.
I really liked that from LA Knight. Sports entertainment. You got the sports part down, but I got both.
Oh yes, that was good. When focusing only on the strengths and not all of the stuff that he always thought that he would be doing when he got into that role, he's just one of the absolute best. Will they make a late career run with him, DDP style? I guess we'll find out. Ryan, go ahead.
Question on the Sarai character. I, it is, Is that gimmick that she's doing based off, like, Family Matters, like how Steve Urkel will get into that chamber and become Stefan Raquel? Because she seems a little bit clumsy, you know, when she didn't transfer and it cost her the match. So just trying to figure out if anyone's, like, a big Family Matters fan on the booking team.
I'm a big enough Family Matters fan that when I'm watching a TV show and somebody goes upstairs, I'm like, uh-oh, they're being written out. I know Family Matters that well, so I hadn't thought that. Nate, mute yourself. I hadn't thought that, but I don't think so. I don't think that's intentional. Let's just talk about that match, I suppose, and that feud. Tiffany Stratton, evil, yes, but also psychotic. Which I think is kind of fun. I think it's kind of fun having a, you know, quote-unquote regular pretty girl being psychotic to this level. I think that's fun, and I think Tiffany's doing a pretty decent job of what she's being given because that's not always easy to do. But she's very committed to the role, and she is not one of the people that it was said is in many ways unready. I don't know if she's like – she's not main roster ready. But she's TV ready for sure. Yeah, what they're doing with Sarray here, Sarray, I don't know what we're supposed to say, and the announcers don't agree. I like what they're doing in that they're covering for any, you know, weaknesses, and it's not so much weaknesses with Tiffany, but you don't want her out there working a long match that exposes that she's still got some limits. But I thought they both gained something here. And they gave Sarray an out. It's a weird out, but she didn't get to turn into superhero Sarray because she wasn't able to use the Necklace of Power. I can't believe they're doing that, and I really can't believe that I don't dislike it. But I kind of like what they're doing with Sarray. I think I'm just over the moon that Sarray seems ready to go out there and excited to be there and just such a polar opposite from what she was when she first hit an NXT ring. So yeah, this match 47 seconds long is where I clocked it, but that's a disservice to the whole story and what that is. And this is clearly not over. This will be a TV feud. This will not get stand and deliver time, but this will be a TV feud that I think is perfectly fine. And they're getting some steps. I might have gotten too far away from the actual question, but I do as I do, Tom.
Agreed across the board, especially on Sarray. I like the heirloom, and I like that it's used as an entrance with the pre-tape of her, you know, wearing the casual clothes before coming out in what she wrestles in. And I thought it was a brilliant use of that tonight. They've already established that they show that clip of her coming to the ring and holding the heirloom before making her actual entrance. And so we were sort of like lulled into a sense of safety as we were shown that again tonight. And it turned out to not be the pre-tape this time. She got attacked. So I thought that was actually a rare unpredictable point to put a sneak attack. I did unfortunately find it very, the fact that I found it this way isn't unfortunate, but it is unfortunate that the way Vic Joseph phrased it was, Sarray didn't even have the chance to transform. And it's like, oh, I mean, I liked it in the context of an entrance, and now that you're actually telling us that she literally transforms, that's a little silly, more than a little. So it's just the phrasing of that. But I thought it was a brilliant way of acting, of laying out the scene, Vic's part aside, and just an effective furthering of their conflict here. I continue to be extremely high on Stratton and continue to be excited about this new version of Sarray that indeed feels like she's actually motivated rather than just sort of walking out to the ring and doing what she's being paid to do.
Yeah, and with Vic, and I'll take any number of swipes at Vic, you know that, but you know that he's produced to treat that with dead seriousness as if that's what is actually giving her power, when it would be so much more effective if he said, we know that Saray draws a tremendous amount of her strength from that. Call it what you will, but she believes in it. So why don't we? And that would be so much more nuanced and so much easier to take. But, I mean, we know that Paul Burchill finally got himself over as somebody who had a pirate bloodline. So he decided that he was going to go into it. And Vince wouldn't buy into it because he's like, well, he should just be an actual pirate. And everybody's like, oh, well, Paul Burchill is screwed because Vince doesn't get nuance.
It's the almost a superhero thing. I think that's I was going to say Chris Statlander. Like every time I heard people, criticizing JR or going along with JR for not understanding it and trying to figure out if he was supposed to think she was a literal alien. I was just like, it would be so easy if they just said that this is what gets her in the zone, and so just go with it. Like, think of it what you will. We know she's not actually from outer space or whatever. But I think the almost a superhero has become the recent quintessential example of that. So yes, agreed.
Nathaniel.
The other example I was just thinking too is the demon, like demon Finn Balor. That's how they always present him as well. Yeah. I'm going to start with Tiffany Stratton. So Tiffany Stratton, since we're talking a little bit about this match, I know the question is more about Saray, but she finally won me over tonight. And I know this is a 47-second match, but I loved the brutality and just kind of the maybe brutality is not the right word, but she just seemed like really in the zone and really focused when she was doing backstage attack and even the attack into the ring. She was just, I can't think of the word I'm trying to look for, but I think you guys know what I'm trying to say. So I really like that. And she kind of made me believe in her a little bit more tonight. You know, I've been getting a bit higher on her as the weeks progressed. The first time I saw her, I really wasn't super impressed with her. She had a cool finisher. That was about it. I really, really wasn't like there, but as I've seen more and more of her, I want to see more and more of her in the ring. So I'm certainly getting there with Tiffany Stratton. As far as Saray goes, I am so far on the opposite end of the spectrum than you guys on this one as well. I guess I'm kind of continuing the streak from Dominic and Tom, because Tom and I kind of disagreed a little bit on that too, but I really don't like this character for Saray. You can do supernatural in wrestling. It's been done, right? Undertaker, Kane, you know, just to name a few. Bray Wyatt, you know, somebody else did you a supernatural well. And this is kind of – they kind of confirm that tonight. We're, you know, transforming when she comes out to the ring, right? I don't feel like this is good enough to have to fall in that supernatural realm. I can't – suspend my disbelief for Saray at this point in time. Maybe I will. And I know back in the day people didn't for Undertaker either, you know. But so who knows? Maybe it'll grow over time here or something like that. I personally don't like it. I find it just very, I find it kind of childish almost. And that's not really what I want in NXT. At least, you know, in this iteration of NXT anyway. I know it's a little bit more high school-esque as we've said in the past. I'm not really digging it. It's an interesting concept. It's a unique idea. I will give them credit. I do kind of like the entrance anyway, where she's, you know, just kind of like the schoolgirl. She comes out and then she's like, you know, a superhero or what have you. I like that. But that's about it. I just, because it's a cool presentation, but I don't like the overall character. I'm kind of hoping it grows on me. This is really kind of the first major feud that I'm calling it a major feud, I guess, but this is like the first big feud that she's had as this new character. So I'll stay a little, you know, optimistic here, but as it stands right this moment, I'm not really high on what Saray is doing.
Ryan, if you've got one more, go ahead.
Final questions on Indy Hartwell. You think it's just a matter of time before she gets a divorce? from Dexter Lumis, because it seems like she's more concerned about outdoing Persia on the kissing and then watching, you know, them make out just to outdo what they're doing instead of, like, actually having a true romance in a relationship.
To Indy and Dexter, I would genuinely be disappointed if they got divorced.
I can't believe
I'm saying that. But that's how I feel. Dexter lost me. At the outset, I was like, okay, I'm going to try with this. This is weird. This is out there. I'm going to try with this. And it just wasn't there. Man, they found a way to make it work, even as a babyface Stone Cold killer. Yeah, and they've made me invest in this relationship, which is really hard to do when Dexter has said two words on TV. And that would bum me out. I also don't see the way past this without at least acknowledging their split. Although we know that they can bring people to the main roster and then just kind of ignore that part of their history, and that's part of it. I wouldn't say I'm overly – like, I'm not thinking about that on a Saturday, but when I see them on my TV on Tuesday, every single time it does trigger in my head, like, how do they write these guys out of this relationship? And do they have to? Or can they just be together forever? And then I could be like one of those weird soap opera viewers who becomes enraged when they find out that these people aren't married in real life. Yeah. Or even, you know, people who would talk to Jenna Fischer in real life and could not understand why she wasn't married to John Krasinski.
And she should be, goddammit.
Such a good... I mean, he's with Emily Blunt. He's doing a fine.
I know, but I love him. I love my Jim and Pam. I'm going to shut up now. Go ahead.
Yep. Hey, yeah. And I get it. That was written in such a fun way, and it was teased for so long. And will they or won't they on a TV sitcom? They always will. Like, people fall for it every time, but they always will in a will they or won't they. In a drama, you can get away with they won't. But in a comedy, they kind of have to do. So, yes, I don't know that they'll split them up. I don't see an easy way to do it. I also don't see any reason for it right now. And certainly I don't think that's going to be something they do in the short term. I would be stunned if this wasn't a stand and deliver mixed tag. I think the only question for them right now is, do we have time for this on Stand and Deliver, or is this a TV?
Thank you, Nurse Betty. I agree with everything you said about in response to Ryan's actual question. So just like with the Family Matters thing. As for this actual segment and overarching feud, I thought tonight was bookended nicely. I thought the tag entrance for a match against each other was cute. And then the match, like, hopeful is probably too strong a word, but I have enjoyed Persia lately in a way that's not just the usual, like what I usually say about acts at her level, like, oh, I'm enjoying watching the progress. I think she actually hit a point where it was like, oh, I can watch one of her matches and not think about how rocky and stilted and slow everything is and how she needs the other person to help her out quite a bit. And this match was right back to that. Just really felt like she was back in a place where she's showing how much of a work in progress she is, despite the match's brevity. But then I did like, I thought the aftermath was very amusing, and it just, like a very funny scene during the will they won't they of Sam Malone and Rebecca, whatever her last name was, and the second half of Cheers. I was imagining that both Sam Shaw and he's had Elliot Sexton, he's had so many names I can't remember his act, Tony Modra, Duke Hudson, I was imagining them laying there after the cameras cut being like, gonna need a moment before I can stand up in public. There's a very funny scene in when Sam Malone is on a date. Sam is on a date with Rebecca, and she starts whispering in his ear and then says, oh, well, let's go do all these things right now. And he's all excited. And so she just takes off, and he's left there with the bill. She was actually trying to ditch him. And they don't say why, but you know why. Why he's not standing up from the table. I think Dexter and Duke were thinking to themselves, Margaret Thatcher naked on a cold day, Margaret Thatcher naked on a cold day. But I don't know why I didn't think of a mixed tag match previously. It was this segment, seeing them standing across from one another, where I was like, oh, this is more than just a men's singles feud with extra flavor in the women's tag division. This is totally a mixed tag, probably at Stand and Deliver. Cool. I'm saying that about Ray versus Escobar as well. I've also said, and will stick to, that at the rate they pay off these stories, any of these things could easily end up on main eventing or even going on at the top of the second hour at the crossover point any week of TV. But I think the sort of relating to Ryan's question a little bit, the hang-up for me is just that the story feels underdeveloped in the sense that I guess the reason why Indy is supposed to be upset is because she used to be with Duke, like off-screen prior to NXT, and now she's jealous, the word? She certainly wants to show her up. It doesn't seem like she's, I don't know, is it like, am I forgetting a segment where she said Duke is wrong for you, but Persia still wants to be with him, and Persia was even the one that said, well, I didn't want you to be with Dexter, but I supported you through that. So it is sort of like, what's really going on here?
Nathan Aloysius Limber.
Well, it does begin with an A, but it's not Aloysius.
Don't lie to our listeners. You can lie to me. Lying to our listeners is beyond the pale. Go ahead.
I actually kind of wish it was Aloysius. But anyway, I really don't have anything to add that from what you guys said. I pretty much echo a lot of what you guys were just talking about. Dexter and Indy, when that Index storyline first started, I did not think I was going to get into it. And, man, I got into it. Like the Index wedding to kick off NXT 2.0, I was there for it. I loved it. I'm actually kind of excited to, because the mixed tag, it really didn't occur to me either until tonight when, you saw all four of them in the ring and I went, oh, that's where they're going. That didn't cross my mind at all until that point. But I think this is the first time we'll actually see them in a match together, see Indy and Loomis in a match together. Which I think is great. I'm actually really excited about that. As far as like what you were just talking about, Tom, I am also kind of a little bit confused with the story though, because it's, unless again, I missed something too. It's kind of just been a little like why exactly is she trying to one-up, or why does she seem so jealous and things like that? Does she still have, feelings for Duke or whatever? I don't know. It's a little bit too soap opera-y for me, so I'm kind of like just going along for the ride, trying not to think about it too much. Overall, I'm excited about the match. If that is indeed where they go, it seems certainly like it is. So, like I said, I didn't have much to say about it, so I'm going to shut up and we'll move on.
Ryan, thank you as always. And you guys can always call us at 515-605-9345. Okay, our opener tonight was Cameron Grimes versus Santos Escobar in a qualifying match for the ladder match for Stand and Deliver for a North American Championship title. When I have to write what these matches are for the recap, I always miss the opening bell because it takes like half an hour to write what the match is. But anyway, first world problems. Yes, so Grimes loses this one. Carmelo and Trick are on the call, and man, is that a good place for them. They do some of their best work there. Carmelo does the delusional heel very well, talking about he doesn't like these cocky guys out there. He doesn't get too wink-wink about it. He stops short of that. But yeah, it worked. It really worked for me, what they were doing with him, putting this championship up in a ladder match. And I like that there are qualifying matches for this. I don't remember if they've been doing that in the past, but I'm a fan of qualifying matches because they put some sizzle on matches that may or may not have it already. So Grimes does the job to Escobar, with Escobar getting some help from the outside, from Legato. Grimes later in the show gives an impassioned interview about the last thing that he was able to tell his father was that he had been signed to NXT and he was going to be a champion, but he just keeps disappointing him. And he's got to turn that around. Even at the end of the Grimes match, because Hayes has a feud with Grimes, and we can all see that. So I'm psyched for this ladder match. And the only thing, I mean, a ladder match with six guys, the whole idea is supposed to be that it's unpredictable. But I almost want to see this more because it seems inevitable that Cameron Grimes wins the North American Championship here, unless they decide that now is the time they want to call him up. So I guess I don't know how to feel about the fact that they're going to have a six-man match that is going to have a lot of twists and turns on the way to it, and they're going to have matches to just get into the match. But already, with only one guy in and one guy guaranteed out, quote-unquote, I feel like it's obvious that Cameron Grimes is going to win that match. Tom?
Yeah, I guess hearing you describe the interview, which I somehow missed, I didn't leave the television screen the entire show, but I missed that interview segment. It does seem that way. Grimes, this match clean, right?
Yeah, there was like a distraction. Like they called out the fact that he got distracted by Carmelo and Trick.
But
that was
it. So that's all you need then. That's where the feud is. So I'm all right with that. And the reason I know why I missed that because, and I'm sorry to say, this is something I haven't said for quite a while. This was a match that you just don't need to pay attention to. Who cares? It's two guys that you know are both great wrestlers. You know they're getting time. So you can just tune out for 15 minutes, imagine that they did a bunch of cool moves for the sake of doing cool moves, and that's it. So I'm sorry that that's the position I find myself in again after however many months, you know, since the last time that happened. But it was just like, if I had a fast-forward button through live TV, this is the part of the show I would have skipped.
Nate?
So I kind of echo a lot of what you said too, Kelly. The qualifiers and things like that, those, they're always fun when you get kind of like a tournament going for a championship or something like that. So I'm kind of looking forward to that. It does seem like Cameron Grimes is it's like an inevitable win, but he's now out of the match. So somehow I feel like he's going to like go back to some of his old Weasley ways and, you know, somehow get into the match. That, you know, something I was kind of thinking about even before this is getting brought up. It's kind of what I'm wondering if you know, see what happens there, if he's somehow able to get into the match or if he winds up interfering in the match and costing, you know, Carmelo his title, then the two of them feud from there. But that's not really what I want to see. I definitely want to see Cameron Grimes in a title, you know, in like a proper NXT North American Championship match. You know, if they did it the way, you know, I was just describing, or, you know, or something like that, you know, obviously it'd be a continuation of the feud, but then the title wouldn't be in the picture. The feud wouldn't quite seem as important. So, you know, we'll see, kind of see how it plays out. But, that's kind of really all I get to say about that. The match itself was, it was fine. It was actually on the better side of fine. I thought it was, this is one, him and Escobar. That's right. Yeah. Actually, I was really high on this match now that I think about it. Especially for like a start, I think this was the opening match, if I'm not mistaken too. So kind of like kick off the show, you know, especially after the NXT, the Miz TV segment, which I still can't believe we had a Miz TV segment on NXT, but we haven't even talked about that. We'll get there. I guess we did talk about it a little bit,
now that I think about it. Anyway.
It's been a long time coming. It was a little over 8 years ago that Miz first came to NXT and said he should do a Miz TV segment, and he never ended up doing one.
Wow. All right.
They pay everything off. Let it play out, guys.
See? Things may take almost a decade, but, you know, hey, it'll eventually play out. That's kind of really all I got to say about Escobar and Grimes. I thought it was a fantastic match. My big question is really like, you know, it's like, you know, where exactly does Grimes go from here? If it's not him getting the NXT North American title now that they've, you know, he's, like I said, he's out of the tournament. So now what, you know? Or not tournament, you know what I mean. Now what? If he doesn't wind up getting back into this match somehow. So, yeah, we'll see. Maybe they'll do like a second chance type of a match and he'll get himself in it or something. But we'll go from there.
That is exactly what I opined in my recap. He would win the second chance with all the guys who lost. Next week, we have two qualifying matches. Solo Sikoa will defeat Roderick Strong, and Grayson Waller will defeat A-Kid to get into that match. You could do A-Kid over Waller to get Waller into a different feud or into a different brand, but I believe that they will do Solo and Grayson to get them there. Mystery Theater, folks, who attacked the Creed brothers, Nathan Abercrombie Lindbergh?
SpookyMilk.com.
Oh, my God. You're out.
Yeah, had to bring it back. Had to bring it back.
Muted.
who did it? Who done it? Who done it? It's definitely, it's got to be Imperium, right? It's got to be. This segment, though, like, this is actually, and I don't know if maybe it was because they were wearing NWO stuff and they were, you know, kind of commemorating Scott Hall and all that, but it's actually one of the first times that, like, I kind of got in the corner of MSK, even when they, you know, first came out and they started addressing the Creed brothers, I actually was there for it. They kind of, you know, captured me in that moment, which is surprising because I've been wanting to like MSK, but there's something about them that's kind of like made them not click for me. I don't know what it was, if it was just that, you know, their promo style tonight, just the way they presented themselves, or just simply the fact that they came out and said something logical where, you know, hey, you guys interfered in the match last night or last week. If you didn't and we won, you would have had the first opportunity at our titles. So maybe that's what it was too. I don't know, but I really enjoyed MSK here tonight, in this segment. The Creed brothers, I'm also glad we're finally seeing more of them on the mic. You know, Malcolm Bivens, awesome mouthpiece. You know, we've talked about that a million times. But what I really wanted to see is something I said probably a month or so ago, maybe even a little longer than that, is I really wanted to see what they could do on the mic. We can see what they can do in the ring, clearly, and they're phenomenal in the ring. But I wanted to see their mic skills. And they have some. I mean, they're not the greatest talkers in the world, but they're better than what I was expecting. And they've kind of proven that over the past few weeks. So I'm kind of glad about that. We'll kind of see who done it, but I'm pretty sure it's Imperium.
I felt sure that it was MSK until this week when MSK's music played and they were the first ones out, and I was like, I thought I had it, but I guess MSK was their red herring. So whatever, it could still be them. And the reason that I would say it could still be them is that they're in the match. They're in the match. They're in the triple threat that Imperium made against these two teams. And if MSK wins and you think they've transitioned to a babyface champion, but instead it's just a way to get the championship to another heel. And it's for them to say, it was us. It was me, Austin. It was me all along. Then it can be these guys. I don't know. I mean, part of me wants to watch the world burn. What if it was the Dirty Dogs and they also win the tag team championships? but yes, I thought it was MSK, and the fact that they're in the triple threat suggests that that's possible too. It could also be a singles wrestler, and they're really trolling us by saying that it definitely was a tag team wrestler. I don't know. I'll have to think about this more. Tom?
The real clue that it's not MSK tonight was Wade Barrett laying it on so thick that he knew it was them when they were making their entrance. Yeah. However, we are not right up next to the reveal. The reveal's probably still 2-3 weeks away. So I do still think it's them, and that is just well, not only does it make sense, but it's also optimism, because if it's not them, then this was just all incredibly silly. They lost the Dusty Cup and they still get the title shot that the Dusty Cup earned them, earned the winners. So that element of it is annoying me. And if it doesn't turn out to have been a ploy by them to get in the match and they win the titles and turn heel, because if they're going to do all this and turn heel, then, you know, they're gonna get the belts. You would imagine, especially after they spent so much time on those Shaman videos and they did absolutely nothing, less than nothing for them. It was backward motion for them. So they've been trying with these guys, and I think this is the new thing to try. So I do still think it is MSK for those reasons. As for the segment that happened in front of the audience, Julius, for his small part of it, and we've said this about him before, surprisingly pretty good when he's talking. Brutus, I think we've kind of said the same thing about him, and maybe like a Diamond Mine backstage segment where it's like, oh, that was kind of surprising. I expected him to be just like a total meathead with no room for a brain inside like an 8-inch thick skull.
Said that, you read my mind.
Yeah. But just him standing back there like a combination of Otis Dozovic and Brock Lesnar while Julius does the talking, I thought was a very effective scene. Honestly, sorry, Malcolm Bivens, he didn't even need to be there. I'm into these guys as just a tag act away from having a manager or being a part of a faction. And then for the backstage segment, it was frivolous. I do like involving since we haven't, I don't think we've called it out. Grizzled young veterans and Blade and Inofe were accusing one another of having done it while Malcolm Bivens was trying to figure out, you know, who murdered his tag team. Again, frivolous, but I like when they put at least a little, just one backstage segment ahead of having a match. I'm sure this match is going to take place next week. Maybe they announced it and I missed it, because I always tend to just what's the word? Well, whatever. I always end up tuning out when they're advertising stuff for the following week. I need to like slap myself in the face at that time of the show and force myself to pay attention. But I like when they give it a little bit of heat rather than just throwing it out there cold. And I think it helps the mystery that they're actually expanding it beyond, even if it's not really believable, that they are expanding it beyond just the teams involved in the stand and deliver match. Grizzled Young Veterans and Blade and Inofe could very well fit the bill of, you know, where I put Escobar and Grimes. But for whatever it's worth, there have only been 4 episodes of Level Up so far. Is it 5 yet? I think it's only 4 so far. So there are, like, nobody's had a chance to become a, quote, mainstay on it. But if there are any mainstays on Level Up so far, Grizzled Young Veterans and Blade and Inofe fit that bill. So it is kind of, even though they were already well-established on actual 2.0 TV, it is kind of like, you know, having paid attention to that weekly preliminary show, kind of like seeing these guys having gone through the preliminaries again and getting another shot at wrestling on the main card.
All right. We have covered much of what is on this show, either directly or indirectly. We haven't really covered Tommaso Ciampa's impassioned promo in the ring, a sort of goodbye. And the audience understands that. They see the writing on the wall. They know how things have changed. They know that one way or another, Ciampa is probably done on this particular brand. He has been there for 7 years. He mentioned he got there in 2015. The first thing I thought is Tom and I will be talking about him again fairly soon on 8 years back. Not as far away as I thought. So, and yes, he did. He wasn't on NXT proper regularly for, I think, a while, but he did get that. He has been doing that for a very long time. So he gave, oh man, I just loved every second of this promo. And then we had Tony D'Angelo with the crowbar misdirection. Would have been very easy for him to just attack. Instead, he acts like he's on board with Ciampa and then gets the extra dose of heel heat by giving Ciampa the knee to the crotch and showing that he does not respect him enough not to do that to him. The fans do the yes chant for this match as if this is the match that Ciampa should go out on. it deserves a bigger match or somebody better than D'Angelo, but this is what NXT is for now. So now this is what it's going to be. And there might be something in D'Angelo, although I remain somewhat cold on him. I don't know. There's something there, but I think it is still a ways off. We had that. We had Cora Jade trapping members of Toxic Attraction. This played out exactly as I thought it was going to. When she stole those titles, she baited the two tag team champions into a cage and to a dumpster. And then she got tricked by Mandy Rose, who presumably was watching TV and knew what happened. In Mandy Rose's own car, Cora Jade goes in there like a horror character who is just doing something so stupid that you can't believe it. And she got trapped there. And then the other members of Toxic Attraction apparently had gotten free in that time as well. Other than that, I don't know that there was anything noteworthy on this show. But if you guys can cover those items. And if there's anything else you need to clean up on, go ahead on that, Tom.
Let's see. We also had Miz TV. I thought it was funny that Miz was trying to sing along with Dolph Ziggler's lyrics to his song, and maybe he got a few of them, but at the point that the camera caught, he didn't know what the words were, so that was funny. I think it's something that the main roster heels are coming in and talking about how much money they make and acting like big cocky stars, but the crowd is loving it because they're getting to see the bigger, you know, network established stars. So they're having to work against an audience that doesn't mind that they're like, oh yeah, we get big paychecks. Most of the crowd there was not just in favor of Ziggler, who you'd think that they would be really upset with, but they were in favor of The Miz too. And Miz didn't even really do too much to try to turn them. But apart from that, and apart from the stuff we already covered there, pretty inoffensive. It's the kind of thing that, you know, everybody's going to be like, I can't believe that there was a Miz segment on NXT. And it's just like, come on, man. It was just an element. It was a contract signing, a face-to-face, or whatever. It was just the vehicle that they used to further the top title feud and maybe draw a few, like, I don't know, Miz and Mrs. fans or whatever.
Not to mention the benefit that Miz can do to these young heels backstage in the couple of hours he's there. That's what this is for, people.
Exactly. There was also a brief Wendy Chu and Dakota Kai backstage segment, which I just tweeted out Dakota Keenan and Karen Kell, because because Karen Q said that she really likes orange soda for no reason at all. She just said it. There was also an A-Kid match.
Yeah, you know, we passed through much of that. Vic says this is one of the most anticipated debuts in recent memory, which it wasn't because they didn't really promote it. It could have been because they could have shown the stuff he did in the Heritage Cup, which was really impressive. And then they didn't give him an entrance. They gave us the end of Kushida's entrance and none of A-Kid's. And then they put A-Kid over Kushida in under 5 minutes in a match that was completely throwaway and made me, I was just like, please tell me that this is the end of Kushida in NXT. Give him to New Japan again. That's my number one. Give him to the main roster. That's my number two. But they clearly aren't using him here.
Kushida has wrestled twice on NXT Level Up, and you know how the rest of that sentence ends. He lost both times. So, A-Kid, because of my recent Wrestling Night in America appearance, and we will be on the forthcoming Wrestling Night in America. I'm going through a brief, rare period of actually actually watching AEW content. So I saw the Dante Martin match, and I saw that they just totally threw out cold this 12-year-old boy-looking person and in a world title match. And it wasn't until after the match had started when they finally got around to being like, oh, he's actually number two, or, you know, whatever characterless Excalibur, like pseudo mid-90s Vince McMahon announcer voice, you know, you want to throw in there. This is why this match is happening. Oh, that's why your world title match is happening cold as the second segment of a 2-hour program. Okay. This felt like that. I love Mako Satomura, so no disrespect. But nobody's watching NXT UK. I don't even know if Darrell is still watching NXT UK. And he was the only person I knew who was still watching it.
Dude, so, I stopped watching it, and I've seen the first, like, 250 episodes.
Yeah, it's just clones of the same person that come out and wrestle in black trunks over and over and over again, and then Mako Satomura. And every once in a while I'll tune into Mako's matches, for her and to see, you know, Aoife or the other people whose names I've since forgotten that she's wrestling, just to see who's coming up over there. But man, nobody is watching NXT UK. I don't care if we've heard about A-Kid because he is one of the names. Like, if you know, Dragunov would be the top one, setting aside, you know, even before he wrestled on domestic NXT, Dragunov would be the name of the post Pete Dunne, post Walter era. And then A-Kid is probably the next one down when, you know, everybody knows Tyler Bate and Trent Seven and blah, blah, blah. The South Wales subculture, you know, we know them, but A-Kid is like the next one down after Dragunov. That's like the person who we've heard that name, but they're not, they weren't a big deal during the Pete Dunne Walter era. So we don't know who this guy is, and they barely introduced him. They had that little video pack. I'm spending more time on this than I need to. The point is basically made that they sure gave him a little video package last week, but he just looked like some kid that was being put over Kushida cold for no reason. And it was there, and it was gone, and I completely forgot it even existed until I was scrolling past the note just now. So, there's that. I actually am surprised to hear that he's going up against Waller next week because, oh, man, it feels like something has got to happen where Waller loses by countout or something along those lines because he's – you know, the title Waller should be going for, and I know I said that he's not in that scene right now because the heel-heel dynamic doesn't work for him, and when he wins the title, it should be for, you know, with maximum heat, like, you know, evoking when he attacked Gargano. He should be top title scene. He should not be North American. Honestly surprised he's even in the qualifying matches. But I expect a kid to win that one way or another. Cora Jade, they did the multiple camera angle thing, which totally spoiled it. The trapping Toxic Attraction was silly, but it would have worked. I've been watching some, in preparation for Then and Now, I'm going to do with Frank. I've been watching some Attitude Era stuff back, which is just like super nostalgic and really hard to be objective about because, that was, speaking of, soap operas, that was my soap opera. But there's silly stuff like that on it all the time. And it works if you just film it in a way that's believable. And this was not believable, multiple takes and cutting back and forth to where we've just seen there isn't a camera. She locks JC Jane in the cage, and then immediately they cut to a shot of a camera inside the cage. Then they go to the Mandy Rose part, and I'll just say real quick that Mandy Rose driving a Range Rover is the most in-character thing that they've ever done for Mandy Rose. But then they go right back to not being in character for her because she does the where to Stephanie in the backseat. She's Michael Myers all of a sudden. She was laying in wait. Like, I can't imagine the Mandy Rose character doing that. So that was silly. If they hadn't tried to get so cute with it and they had just had like, oh, she just attacks from the side or whatever. She figured that Cora would probably go out to the car, so she attacks from the side. Fine. Same effect. When we were talking about it last week, I spaced that Cora had attacked Mandy in the VIP lounge, and I thought of it afterward. But I am pleased that when we were talking about it with Sean, that I was able to suss out that maybe it wasn't that hard, but suss out that Cora is the challenger because. Coming out of the TV, just forgetting that VIP segment that came and went so quickly had even happened. It was just like, are they trying to do something with Raquel? Is Mandy even going to have a match on Stand and Deliver? I don't know. And then I thought about it, and I was just like, the only option right now is Cora. So here we are. Yes, I agree with your assessment of her, Kelly, but I do also feel like she's doing okay for herself. It's not great. She's not totally living up to the promise that was shown and so deliberately built into the Women's War Games match. But she's doing better than a lot of her contemporaries, I think. I also thought it was humorous that this whole bit totally felt like leftovers from Mia Yim's storyline with Shayna Baszler going into the takeover when she challenged Baszler and she was brutally taking out Jessamyn Duke and Marina Shafir. Ciampa's stuff. I loved the Scott Hall tribute that he did. No one that I've seen anyway has done that particular one before, and it felt organic because he saw the fans sign, and that was nice. Oddly, even though we've felt that Ciampa is on his way out of NXT for a couple months now, this segment happening now felt a little cold, and Vic really had to lay it on like, oh, we've been hearing the rumors all day. And I'm like, I hadn't. I saw Braun Breaker's security footage, but I hadn't heard rumors about Ciampa all day. And this was absolutely in the same format as what they did with Johnny Gargano, which is why it's a good thing that Tony didn't just hit him with the crowbar, because that would have felt just like a total photocopy. It did feel like this was being put out there to have a swerve at the end. If they hadn't shown us the Breaker security footage, I would have thought that it would have been Breaker, because Ciampa's the one that lost Breaker's championship. So I still feel like that would have been the smarter way to go. But maybe they'll surprise me. I really don't think Breaker should win that championship back, but we'll see what they do. It would be too much of a nitpick to say that I feel like it was too meta for Ciampa to acknowledge that the people booing him during his heel run were just sort of playing along and trying to send signals to the main roster. But that was one part of this. That,
I was conflicted. Go
yeah,
ahead.
Yeah. And I, enough said, but the rest is Ciampa excels at this kind of thing. So they just let him go out there and do his thing. Tony D'Angelo, I wouldn't have a problem with this if they, well, I don't know, like to do it the way they did it, he has to be heel, but he was catching on. I've said it over and over again. He caught on immediately as a baby face. Yes, as sort of like an ironic, like, oh, this is so silly that we're just going to get into it kind of thing. But they only turned him to have it make sense that he was on the 2.0 side of the War Games match. And he's just stayed heel, and it just doesn't, I don't know. The character is not as intriguing anymore. Intriguing isn't even the right word. It wasn't intriguing before, but it was at least fun. And it's none of those things anymore. And boy, he's got to stop quoting The Godfather. You know, this whole, I know he's being told to say probably everything, but they definitely want to call him the Godfather of NXT. But then the line didn't even fit when he grabbed Ciampa and said, "I know it was you." It's like, that's not the kind of scene that line is in. That doesn't fit. What? Mandy beating up Cora, who killed the Creeds? What else? I guess the only other thing I have here is just that I really enjoy, well, I enjoy everything with Briggs and Jensen right now, but I enjoy that they've involved Fallon Henley here as their friend. Fallon Henley feels like she's their real friend who actually wants to hang out with them, and they are like, they're taking too long to truly embrace that because they're too focused on trying to date Casey and Caden. But Fallon getting involved with them feels less like, oh, they just needed a spot to put her on the show because they like her and they want her on the USA Network and not just on 205 and Level Up. But it feels like an intriguing part of their little what's now a trio, sort of.
Yeah, it seems like somebody on top is saying, hey, with Tony D'Angelo, evoke The Godfather. And they're like, take exact lines from The Godfather? Can do. yeah, just have him say, like, transitional lines from The Godfather in every situation. Like, he can't speak unless he speaks in Godfather lines. That's what it is.
I'm just waiting for a horse head in the locker room.
Yeah, it's, you know, he just barely stops of calling Tommaso Fredo here. Like,
yeah,
he
yeah.
It's like he did the line. It didn't make sense. And if you don't know The Godfather Part 2, what would that even have meant to you? You're like, wait, what? What did that?
Yeah, it didn't make sense in context.
Yeah.
And he could have called him a Fredo. That's become a actually, like, really, really, really horrible insult. Like, you don't say that to somebody unless you really mean it.
I wonder if you even have to know the movie to know.
Yeah,
I don't even know if
probably.
You have to know the movie to know.
Yeah, yeah, I agree with that. I think it's like a Roman Catholic thing, I guess. Now I'm just talking out of my ass. But I was gonna say the horse head thing, maybe a blessing in disguise that Taya Valkyrie got released. Actually, somebody who doesn't pick up that I'm talking about her dogs might think that was way more insulting than I intended it to be. She's a very beautiful woman.
Yeah, it's not like you were mentioning Carmella. Nathan Aloysius Lindberg, go ahead.
All right, so I really like a lot of what Tom said. I'm pretty much like in agreement with for really a lot of the segments he kind of just talked about. So the one I really wanted to focus on was Ciampa and D'Angelo. So Ciampa, first off, like, I love his promo style, and I love the fact they're able to, like, just let him go out and do his thing and just kind of talk. It felt super genuine and all that, but like Tom said, kind of, albeit a little bit cold, like, where was this coming from? You know,
I did have a relatively busy day today. However, I mean, I had Twitter open here and there, and I don't remember seeing anything about, you know, Tommaso Ciampa, like, having some announcement or anything like that. We've heard the hype all day. I mean, I certainly did it. I also spend quite a bit of time on Reddit, and I didn't see anything about it there either. So is what it is there. But one thing that I did notice, and this is just completely by chance tonight, because I was kind of thinking to myself, like, you know, maybe before Ciampa, like, goes up to the main roster, maybe I'll get, like, a T-shirt. So it's like I went to WWEshop.com. All of his shit's gone. And what's left is on clearance. So I'm thinking more than likely this is probably going to be his call up. Like he's going to, you know, stand and deliver, and then he's going up. You know, where this kind of also kind of just like came out of the blue. You know, that's also kind of like an indication of that for me as well. I am still kind of high on D'Angelo as well. I don't know if it's because, like, even though I've got a last name Lindbergh, I'm mostly Italian. So, I mean, that could be it. You know, love the Godfather movies and things like that. I think he has potential. I'm not saying that you guys weren't saying that or anything like that, but I do. I think he has potential, and he has potential to be pretty a solid star in the company. However, if he's going to be kind of put into the stereotypical, like, Italian gimmick, like, I don't know what the ceiling is for him there. He's going to have to branch out a little bit. Now, granted, that might come once he, inevitably hits the main roster, you know, depending on how long he's down in NXT. But from like what I've been hearing, what I've been reading and things like that, the NXT brass seem really high on D'Angelo. I mean, putting him up against Ciampa is kind of, I wouldn't say proof of that, but it's an indication of that for sure. So I wouldn't be surprised if they have, you know, high hopes for the guy. I've said it before and I'll say it again. I don't necessarily see this current incarnation of Tony D'Angelo as NXT champion, but I could see him in a championship match, right? Like LA Knight tonight, right? You know, in some sort of a TV match like that for the NXT championship, almost like, you know, I don't say like a one night type of feud or something, because, you know, this could potentially go on with LA Knight or something like that. But, you know, something you could certainly do like a one night feud championship match or something with Tony D'Angelo, or even if it was, you know, building from, you know, big show to big show, you could certainly do that too. And I think it maybe not right this second, like right now, but like in a couple months down the road, I feel like he probably would be a believable contender for the NXT championship, depending on who's got it. Because we still don't really know what's going on with Dolph Ziggler and Bron Breakker and all that. We'll obviously see what happens in Stand and Deliver. But if it's a face champion, then I think Tony D'Angelo would certainly be somebody they'd put in that spot. Maybe first and North American title, but I think the North American title is so kind of tied up right now. With everything going on with Carmelo Hayes, there's so many different people involved in that, and there's so many different directions that particular story can go after this, after the ladder match at Stand and Deliver. I don't think, you know, he's going to be destined for the North American title anytime soon. So my money is kind of on seeing Tony D'Angelo in the NXT title scene, probably within like the next 6 months.
I'm Kelly Wells. You can find me all over social media at Spooky Milk or at SpookyMilk.games. Games. And that's, you kind of took my closer away from me, but that's our show, I believe. Unless there's anything else that you guys feel is absolutely burning. But that's it. And a couple weeks to Stand and Deliver. I think NXT 2.0 is okay right now. I feel like they're trying to strike the balance, and they're trying to find out who deserves that TV time. I wish they would not put people out there who are clearly not there in the first place. But I dreaded this week, and I found that I had a pretty good time. So low expectations, maybe, but I enjoyed the show this week and don't have any major complaints. Nate,
at Nate Lindberg on Twitter. I do the NXT hits and misses, which, as I said earlier, I do have up on pwtorch.com for you guys. Check out if you would like to do so. Also, check out my YouTube channel at Deej Time, DEGTIME, where we take a therapeutic look at role-playing games. As far as NXT goes, I actually also thoroughly enjoyed the show tonight. This is probably the most I've enjoyed an NXT 2.0 show since the rebrand. So I got to give them a little bit of credit there. I hate saying that too, because there's so much main roster talent. We had five main roster talents on the show tonight, but I actually kind of enjoyed what they were doing. So I'm thinking maybe we keep going in this direction and we'll be looking at the black and gold brand still fondly, but I won't be saying, come on, give me the black and gold brand back, you know? So anyway, that's me. Bye, guys.
Tom Staupe. At Tom Staupe, and you can tweet me there about wrestlers who appear on NXT Level Up, whether you are watching that preliminary show on Peacock or not, and I will include your thoughts on the monthly VIP show bonus point, tracking their progress. But until it is time for the March episode, I will talk to you again on NXT 8 Years Back on Saturday with Kelly. And with, I think, both of you guys on Wrestling Night in America about whatever you guys, the listeners, want to talk to us about. I'll be watching AEW content again. I actually got some pretty good responses from several people about how I addressed my criticisms of AEW's product with Greg. So you'll have an opportunity to ask me more specific questions on Sunday night as we do another takeover, as it were, of Wrestling Night in America. So I'll talk to you then.
And maybe we'll actually touch on the emails we forgot to touch on tonight.
Were there some?
There were four.
Oh!
I literally just noticed
mama.
Them.
Okay.
I forgot. I'm sorry, Kevin and Feeney and David and JB.
I'm conflicted. What do we do here?
You want to just read through them and see if we is that disrespectful to? I haven't screened them, so I don't know if it's just sort of like general stuff that we.
JB says, "Hi team, it's JB from Detroit. Do you think the Dirty Dogs have had a positive, negative, or neutral impact since interacting with NXT 2.0? The ratings haven't moved much, and judging by the reaction that Bron Breakker got on Raw, I'm not sure they did much to elevate him either. As always, love the show, and go VIP." David Podnar says, "Between the main roster visiting NXT this week with Dominic Rey and The Miz showing up, the horrific camera shots, and the Cora Jade Mandy parking lot fight, we almost had an NXT live sex celebration with the makeout duel. Oh, we had a couple of good matches, too. I'm assuming this is a turn for a wicked heel for Cameron Grimes." Oh, I definitely disagree there. "This week was at least not boring. Have a good week, everyone. Dave Podnar." Yes, I think this is a hero's journey for him. This is from Steve F. "After watching Cora Jade's snarky actions against Toxic Attraction, I was again reminded that Cora's future stardom should be as a heel. She was obnoxious with Raquel weeks ago, and even more so tonight with the tag champs. I was actually rooting for Mandy to give her a comeuppance, and who can root for Mandy? Nobody, including you. That is ridiculous. But Cora did act kind of heelish." Kevin Catani says, "Salutations, gents. Pardon the delay. Firstly, great job on the Raw post-show, Tom. Two quick questions for you all. Number one, do you think this Miz appearance is opening a door for more crossover, or was this also a one-off like AJ? There will be many one-offs. That is the answer. Number two, have there been any updates on Johnny Gargano's status? Is he for sure gone, or is there a chance he comes back? They did some teasing tonight, and it was probably unintentional. Who knows with Tommaso? Maybe it was intentional. But the door's open. I think I get the feeling that Johnny is genuinely taking time off. Thanks as always. Go VIP and listen to AYB Hours. Office hours are now over. The Professor, Kevin P. Catani, PhD, Tom."
Thank you for the compliment, Kevin. Means a lot coming from you. Johnny Gargano has posted cute baby stuff on Instagram. That's all I got there. I do feel like this is a genuine break for him. I agree. And uh, I you know, who freaking knows? I do kind of expect that he's going to return to NXT and work with Grayson Waller. But underline, italicize the I don't know of that. Cora had not thought of her with heel potential, but I did compare her stuff tonight to Mia Yim's stuff with Shayna's cronies, which we, like, if you go back and listen to that episode, we, you know, called it out as being pretty darn heelish. So I guess you're onto something. I'll keep that in the back of my mind moving forward, looking at her. Interesting to hear Dave's thoughts. And yeah, Dirty Dog's impact has been positive. There's a lot more buzz around the brand. I don't know, a lot. Relative to where it's been, there's been more talk, there's been more buzz. And I think Dolph is like just the right combination of not a huge star on the main roster, but not so defined down in the fans' eyes that the quality of his work still gives us something to cheer for when he's put in a situation that we actually like him in. He is the kind of guy that for years and years and years we've just rolled our eyes at, like, oh, this is the Dolph Ziggler spot. But when he's got something to sink his teeth into, he reminds us why we got so hot for him for a little bit there. And I again, I'll say it one final time before the next several times I say it. I think he should retain and wrestle some really excellent matches against a bunch of other people on the brand for the next couple months, like Charlotte did.
Nathan Aberbrook Lindberg.
All right, so starting with Kevin's email. So, again, yep, I think this is Miz's appearance is going to be a one-off. But I think it's like Kelly said, it's going to open the door for quite a few more, you know, down the road. As far as Johnny Gargano goes, kind of echo what you guys said. However, I did see today that SRS reported that he found out Candice LeRae her contract is apparently up in spring. So I don't know what that necessarily means, but that could mean something. Potentially the two of them take some time off, come back to NXT, or, you know, after a little while or something like that. But, you know, that is what it is. So we'll see what happens there. So for Steve F's email, Cora Jade certainly was coming off pretty heelish tonight. You know, like, matter of fact, Bruce, you know, we've the three of us and Bruce Hazelwood, we have a chat going on Twitter, just kind of between the four of us, since we all cover NXT. And he, you know, he even brought up, like, what kind of what kind of a baby face is she? And I'm, you know, I kind of jokingly said, she's a baby face the same way Austin was, just the kind of fans haven't bought into it. And she's not. And I think Kelly chimed in and said something, or she's not really ready for that anyway. So yeah, that's kind of where she is there. I could see her going heel, but I don't think that's where they're going to go with her whatsoever. She's going to kind of try and remain that, you know, skateboardy babyface type of a character. With
a little more Kevin McAllister than Stone Cold, probably.
Yeah, there we go. I like that a hell of a lot better than Stone Cold, because Stone Cold, that's too much of a, that's kind of like too high up of a comparison. But Kevin McAllister, yeah, Home Alone, love that movie. Anyway, David Podnar's email. I think, I actually kind of agree with them. This was a good show tonight. It was certainly not boring. But I don't agree with him. You know, I'm kind of in the same boat as Kelly. I think this is going to be kind of a journey for him. I don't think it's going to be a heel turn for, and by him, I mean Cameron Grimes. And to kind of wrap it up with JB's email, actually this email I forgot to read last week. So this is actually from a week ago. But JB's email talking about the Dirty Dogs, I think so far it's had a positive impact on NXT 2.0. I know I've certainly enjoyed it more. I've seen a lot of interaction and people online talking about this as well on Twitter, Reddit, things like that. And it's kind of a lot more than I see, some other, you know, NXT chatter back and forth. This kind of got a lot of people talking. So I think having Ziggler and Rude in NXT 2.0 is certainly a good thing.
All right, folks, we already said who we were. So for Nate Lindberg and for Tom Staub, I am Kelly Wells saying spookymilk.com. Cheers.
Out. Oh.